Good morning, Barbados, and welcome to Brass Tax Sunday for January 12th. I'm Sanka Price, and I'll be your host until 1:15. Our producer is Dennis Johnson, and his will be the first voice you'll hear when he calls this morning at 434-1790. You can also share your views via WhatsApp at 266-4862. Our focus today is the Bridgetown Transformation Project. An integral part of this project is the development of a Golden Square Freedom Park. To provide this new public space, structures such as the temporary market at Jordan's Lane, the Bridgetown Fire Station on Province Street, and the old National Insurance Building have been earmarked for removal. This plan has been welcomed by some and ridiculed by others. That is, some people think this new park in Bridgetown would enhance the beauty of our capital, while others argue the old NIS building and the fire station should not be knocked down to make room for any park, and both buildings should be rehabilitated and included in the development of the park. What we want to examine today are some of the technical challenges facing government in developing Golden Square Freedom Park, and debate from that perspective whether it makes sense to demolish the two buildings to establish the park. We also want to discuss how government should go about redeveloping the Fairchild Street Market as it seeks to transform Bridgetown. To lead the discussion, we have in the studio members of the Barbados Association of Professional Engineers, specifically President and Electrical Engineer, Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Brown, Structural Engineer, Grenville Phillips II, and Mechanical Engineer, George Nicholson. And from the Barbados Institute of Architects, their President, Christian Marshall. Gentlemen, welcome.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get into the discussion, we need to just remind you that Brass Tax Sunday is brought to you with the kind compliments of the quality people at Williams Industries, Inc.
For building supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals, we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tax Sunday. This is Sanka Price with you, along with Dennis Johnson. And as I said before the break, we have with us representatives from the Barbados Association of Professional Engineers, as well as the Barbados Institute of Architects. And we'll be looking at some of the technical challenges facing government in developing Golden Square Freedom Park. And we'll start first with the BAPE President, Lieutenant Colonel Brown. Can you just tell Barbadians what are some of the technical challenges facing government in developing this whole park? And let's try to deal in your introduction as well of, in your opinion, whether it makes sense to demolish the two buildings to establish the park.
Good morning, Sanka and Barbados. So you want me to start with an impossible question? Good morning to everyone. This is an interesting dilemma. First, you started by suggesting that there's a plan to demolish the NIS building and to build a park. I would suggest to you that that's not a plan, that's an intention. When we at BAP, and I would like to think when most professionals think in terms of a plan, they think about a situation where there is a long-term strategic intent that then drives a whole variety of potential options that can possibly achieve that intent, then you tend to have a situation where there are cost-benefit analyses done to look at the various options to see what makes sense and what don't make sense and what is most cost-effective and least cost-effective. You then have an organized selection of the best available option, and then you do an implementation plan. Now that is a plan. Starting so you know where you want to get, you understand where you are, you explore the different routes by which you can get from where you are to where you want to be, and then you develop an implementation plan based on the facts that you would have gathered in the process that I just described. Now, to me, that is a plan. So that when you have a situation like that, there really is no debate about when you get to the point of the implementation of what the intended action, because you would have looked at all the various options. You would understand why, for example, you're not retrofitting and why it makes more sense to demolish. You would understand what the cost will be. Everyone would have a clear idea of what the long-term intent and benefits are expected to be. And therefore, if the decision then is to demolish, they really would, in case of that, in enlightened societies, this is how things are done. So that when a decision is taken to demolish a building, for example, it normally is not a matter for any great debate. This is something that would have gone through a systematic process that the results, based on the facts, clearly indicate this is the best option for a whole variety of reasons. What we tend to have in Barbados seems to be a set of isolated situations where, using limited facts, we make monumental decisions. And then when we get a chance to look at it from a different perspective, we find out that maybe we could have done other things. Or at the very worst, what you find is that different people who have different perspectives then come to completely different opinions about the actions that are to be taken. We cannot afford this in a modern society. The cost, to me, this is management by trial and error. And the cost of this is prohibitive. We cannot afford this in the 21st century. That really is BAP's position on it. So that basically what we are suggesting is that in modern society, in the old days, success tended to be based on having access to material assets and maybe knowledge and all that. The truth is, the most critical thing in this modern world is something that we call change. Things change so dramatically and so quickly that the route to success is actually based on your ability to manage and live in a changing environment. So therefore, something that I like to term organizational effectiveness, how you can get a country or an organization to function at its most efficient level, is the critical factors for success. And to me, this should be the primary reason for being of leadership and government. So that this plan that this kind of planning that I'm talking about, to me, is where we fall down. And if we were to get that right, you will find that almost all of the other things that waste our time and waste our resources will tend to follow based on the facts and on a clear process of management, which have various names. I know it as total quality management, for example, which lead to proper decision-making that people can buy into because they understand the facts and because all the options are laid out and explored. That's my open position on that impossible question you asked.
I'll go to the mechanical engineer second, Mr. George Nicholson.
Well, I haven't had any discussions with Mr. Brown regarding, or Lieutenant Brown regarding this particular topic. From a mechanical engineer perspective, specifically indoor air quality, rehabilitation of a building like the NAS building is extremely difficult and would also be very costly. Whether the park is the best option versus a building that provides essential services to persons who are frequently in the area, such as those who are the commuters right across the road, perhaps shelter for the vendors who are also on the pavement across the road in some in not very sanitary conditions. Whether that is a better use of the space than just an open park is a matter for debate. And the type of planning that Lieutenant Brown is talking about would bring those answers to the fore very quickly. I am surprised to hear that a park is intended for that space. The surroundings of that park are not going to be very hospitable. And when you think of a park, you think of a tranquil area. When right next to it is, you know, Nelson Street and a supermarket and that are going to be producing sort of dust and noise pollution, right next to a bus stand as well, on a very busy intersection, how pleasant is that park going to be for the persons who are going there to relax? I really can't answer that question.
And now we go to the structural engineer, Mr. Grenville Phillips II.
Yes, thank you. I completely agree with our president. What he describes is something called a feasibility study. The first thing you do is a feasibility study, where that's where the options are looked at. That's where the various costs are looked at. And it should be made public so that the public then has a chance to critically review it, make suggestions to improve it, so that when you come to the implementation stage, there is no debate, there is no confusion, there's no further discussion, because you've already done that at the previous step. We cannot, at this stage of our development, to be missing out such a critical step. If it was a small step, I understand, but this is a fundamental step before you do major development. You must do a feasibility study. If the excuse is it may take too long, then set a deadline. Say, all right, I want it finished in 3 months, and therefore put more resources on it and finish it in 3 months. But to not do it, it just doesn't make sense. So I believe one had to be done. It's just that it was not shared. And because it was not shared, that's where all this discussion is taking place. I urge whoever to please make it public and let's take a look at it, and therefore then go ahead with confidence and with the whole country in the same boat and rowing together. I have my oar, I want to row. You know, let us all row together, because we are all in the same boat. We all need to get to where we're going together. allow us to row. The second thing I want to mention is knocking down a building after 30 years is a concern. Low maintenance should be a principal design criteria when designing buildings. We cannot afford to be building high maintenance buildings or designing high maintenance buildings. When we design in, we design the space, the architect is there, we design the strength, but we design for low maintenance so that we don't have the spalling of the concrete because the cover to the reinforcement was too thin. So you add a bit more cover. You don't just design for strength alone. You design for durability, for maintenance. You want this thing to last for 50, 100 years with very, very low maintenance. So that should be a principal criteria. To make sure it's a principal criteria, there must be a set of persons who will review designs before they are built. We have the town planning department, but they just check for spaces and if there are enough bathrooms and if you are far enough away from the property boundary, but not for any strength or durability, certainly not for any maintenance. So they need someone in, and if they don't want to do it there, then at least any building that the public is paying for should be, the design should be published so that the public can look at them. The engineering association could look at them. The architects association could look at them. We could all look at them there. The contractors association could look at them and say, well, this is a very expensive way to build this thing. And therefore, let us have some input in public buildings, in buildings where the public is paying for them. If it's a private building, well, you go ahead. You know, that's your building, you paid for it, you pay for the design, that's a confidential matter. But if it's a public building, allow me to sit in the comfort of my home and go online and pull it down and give the town planning department some free advice. So that's my opening statement.
Mm-hmm. You said 30 years, but wasn't that building there for just about 50 years?
No, no, useful. It was opened in like 78, 79.
So late?
Yes, I think so.
1975.
Right, well, there, 75. So, right, 75, 76. So it was opened then, and within 30 years it was closed. And it remained closed. So it was not occupied. It was only occupied for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. And that's typical, and that should not be. We should not have buildings after 30 years being abandoned.
Okay. And now we go to the architect, Mr. The president of the architects.
Yeah. Hi, morning.
Good morning.
I concur with many of the statements here today. From an architectural perspective, we're always looking for the best use of the space. When we look at that city block, which is unique because it's completely controlled by the government, the buildings have value. We see no reason why to demolish buildings that have value, and we we looked at the at that park, knowing that there was a desire to improve the Golden Square Monument and the Golden that park aspect of it, and we sought to utilizing the assets that we have there to rehabilitate the space to and repurpose the space to start the regeneration of Bridgetown. One of the key factors to the life of a city is occupancy. So that building offers an opportunity to actually bring residences in. It has an opportunity to introduce a number of functions that would be to the benefit of the public. So we just went along that line. We had no brief to work with. We were working, you know, in a vacuum. One of the very first things, like Trevor was saying, we need to establish what the goal is, and from there develop a plan that is to the benefit of all. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to add to the discussion so far.
You said that those buildings have value, and we've heard here, well, we've heard not only here in the calling program, certainly last week I heard it, and just in public, that people were saying, well, okay, the first NAS building is the first major building, so it should be maintained. Others are saying, like Glenn Murray, who I'm sure is going to call, that the fire service building is one of the first built by the Adams administration. This is Sagrada Adams coming out of colonialism. It's one of the first real public buildings that was built. But we also heard from Mr. George Nicholson, the mechanical engineer, that the rehabilitation of air quality in the old NAS building would be an expensive exercise. So when you speak of value, what exactly? Because we now have to do this balance where this building has been closed up from 2005. And if we want to rehabilitate this building, how much is it going to cost?
That's a very good question, and that exercise would still need to be done. Mm-hmm. The value of the building is in its skeleton, its bones, and its overall volume. The concept that we were looking at would call for the entire gutting of the existing building, and the repurposing means all the spaces change, and there'd be installations to improve and to meet building code requirements, which are not currently met in that building. So yes, it would be an expensive exercise. The numbers have not been done yet. The concept was thrown out for ideas. The cost would be best developed when you have a more developed concept plan as to know exactly where you're going. So the purpose of what we had done was just to throw out there that there are other ideas, there are other solutions, and that's just one of multiple solutions that might be put on the table.
But you just said the idea was thrown out, the concept was thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, I don't know if you can discuss this, if it was a confidential matter, but did the government or a government agency actually approach the engineer, the architects, about this to ascertain their views?
No, it wasn't. It was a self-generated exercise.
Mm-hmm.
We just took it on ourselves to do the work to see what the possibilities mm-hmm. could be.
All right. Because Mr. Phillips is also suggesting that he would like to think a feasibility study would have been done, and that we should really see the study. Because I think what I'm hearing here from everybody is that clearly the only way that we can be sure that this is the right step is if the numbers have been crunched and if every aspect has been examined.
Okay, well, yeah, fair enough. The reasonable positions, and I want to say, Grenville calls it the feasibility study, that I you can call it what you want. But let me make it clear, right, that I am pretty sure, in fact, I am absolutely sure that government would have used professional inputs in making some of these decisions. I'm aware, for example, that some of our members have been involved in doing various assessments and are involved in various aspects of this project. So they do have professional people who are providing some level of advice. I would be very, very surprised if something like this kind of work on a building like this was even contemplated in our business without the use of some degree of professional architectural and engineering input. And I'm pretty sure that happens. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I'm really talking about. I'm actually, because let me be quite frank. If I'm an engineer and I make my living by doing engineering, and you come to me with a project that really don't make any sense to me, but this is what you want done, and you need some engineering done to do that project, I will do the engineering that you want. If you want me to build a roof, if you want me to build some pie in the sky spacecraft, I will do it for you, even though I know that it is not the best thing that you should do for yourself. That's the reality of life. The kind of level of thinking I'm talking about, and I suspect this is what Granville means about exposing this thing to the public, is that the question is, what is best for us as a country, as a collective society? When they talk about organizational effectiveness or organizational efficiency, the question is, what is best for the society? So if you ask me as an engineer to do something that you want done because you're paying for it, I will do that for you. If you ask me what is the most effective thing to do for Barbados as a country, that may be a completely different thing altogether. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
I'm with you.
Right. So just to clarify, I don't think we are trying to say here that anybody in the government is trying to do a project like this without professional input. But very often, I've been at length since I've been president of BAP to try to explain to people what engineering is all about. A lot of people think that engineering is this technical stuff that Granville, that these bright fellows like Granville got at, mathematics and those sort of fancy things. The truth is, engineers are simply the people in society who solve complex problems. There was a long period of time when those problems tended to be mathematical in nature and technological in nature. You know, when I became an engineer, for example, it needed an engineer to build electronic stuff and all that. The truth is, if you look at your cell phone, those things are mass produced. You don't need any engineer to do that. Engineers are now doing completely different things. And the challenges that we face in society that need to be addressed is the challenge of organizational effectiveness. How do we get the combination of complicated stuff to work well together? And that's what we need to focus on. So even though government may hire an engineer who would crunch the numbers for them and say, well, for example, I actually would like to know, one, what is the actual value of that building as it sits there now, the shell and the land and all that? What is it actually worth? I would also like to know the question that George raised, the question of what would it actually cost to bring that to retrofit that building and to meet the current building code standards that we have in Barbados or that are internationally acceptable. And I'm sure there are people in Barbados who could actually give us those numbers, and they take that to be the kind of feasibility study that Granville is talking about. If you had those numbers on the table, facts, I mean, the truth is all this back and forth argument that we have about whether you should knock it down, whether you should, but become obvious. I mean, if it is going to cost more, you see me, to rehabilitate it and bring it to standard than it would cost to knock it down and build a new one or build a park or whatever, then the answers become obvious. The problem we have is that we're having these discussions in the absence of facts.
Well, Mr. Nicholson, if I come back to you here now, I know that you were involved in sort of rehabilitation of the court, and you worked on other sick buildings. Now, obviously, based on what you're saying, I don't think you would have had a chance to look at that building, the old NIS building. But based on the scale, the size, the scale, and the complexity of the work that would have to be done there, could you give us a ballpark figure? In other words, an educated guesstimate of what sort of money we'd be looking at to deal with the air quality problems that they have?
Well, the air quality issues are multifaceted. As we will be ripping out all the interior of the building in any event, you have you're basically starting with a shell. So what would it cost to re-air condition the space? If we knew the square footage, we could do some simple math to figure out what the cost of putting a proper ventilation back in would be. I don't know if we know the footprint of the building.
And Mr. Marshall, do you have any idea of the square footage?
Not offhand, no. Mm-hmm.
So I can't really give you the figure without knowing what sort of square footage we're looking at. But the other issue...
But what sort of... sorry, Crossy, but yeah. What sort of amount per square foot are we talking about? In other words, you may not know the square footage of the building, but if you're going to basically rip out and then install... A new system, a system that is going to last with low maintenance, what per square foot something like that would cost? on average?
The thing is, we calculate per ton to figure out air conditioning. So I'd have to do some math to figure that out exactly. But you could be up in probably about $1.5 million for the air conditioning, mm-hmm. in terms of the ventilation alone. The rehabilitation in terms of cleaning the building is, the remediation works is another element that you need to take into account, and that can be extremely costly as well. That probably around another $1 million or $2 million. But the bigger issue for me with a building like that that has sat down for so long and is publicly known as being a building that had indoor air quality issues is the psychological impact on people going back into it. That is always a challenge when you are doing remediation in an active building. People don't trust it. And to regain the trust of the persons who have to occupy the space is always a challenge. They see things, or they hear things, or they remember things from before, and everything is a problem when they go back into the space. So going back into that building as is, without a drastic retrofit, and making it look almost completely different internally, would be a very difficult exercise for you to try and get people to go back in there and trust it. So that is an ongoing issue that you have to face, you would have to deal with, if you simply retrofitted that building.
Yeah, if I could just...
Mr. Marshall.
So I think we're kind of stuck looking at what is, and as opposed to what will be. The reality is the concept that we had for that building and the building next door, in addition to just creating, you know, a space that will generate activity. I mean, that's one of the very most important parts of any sort of development like this. A park is an empty park. There's no reason for people to go there. The park with these other facilities in it will bring people there. Now, where George was talking about refitting, what I started off with is looking at as what is. George is talking about refitting the building, and he's thinking about it as what is, logically. But the reality is our concept plan would, that building would have a large portion of it would become naturally ventilated. Mm-hmm. The air conditioning requirements would be reduced significantly. You know, the whole use of the space is being changed. So, so it's a different ball of wax altogether.
Mm-hmm. So have the architects actually cast their plan?
No, we have not. I'm sorry. We've just putting it out there.
We just did it as an academic exercise.
We put it as an exercise to show that there are other options. Mm-hmm. It's the very first tiny step in the exercise, the process that Trevor was talking about. And Grenville about setting together the plans, establishing the concept and making sure we know where we're going on this thing. There's no point spending a lot of time generating money. Nobody was slapping me, by the way. There's no point spending a lot of money generating all the numbers until you have a concept that is... being tested and agreed that this is the way we want to go, and then the next step is then you generate all your numbers and it's establishing the feasibility study and moving forward.
The one question I ask before I go to you, Mr. Grenville Phillips, based on what I'm hearing from all of you, I go back to the question asked by Lieutenant Colonel Brown, what is the best thing for the society at this stage? Do we need a park that's going to be, that will not, as Mr. Nicholson said, may not be well as well ventilated or be well, should say, not located in a place where it is as pleasant as we would want a park, and tranquil as we want a park to be, because it's opposite of a bus terminal as well as a supermarket and a very active street, active commercial street? Or do we want to rehabilitate a building that psychologically people may not trust and will have difficulty going back in? What is the best thing for this society at this time? Anyone want to start this?
Okay, sorry.
Grenville?
Okay, well, that's a new question.
Well, make your point and get out
there. Yeah, but that's where the feasibility study will come in, because the planners will look at it and decide, well, this is the best use for this property. Christian was mentioning, because I have the same idea as well, you don't need to put it back into offices. If you're putting it back into offices, then yes, you're looking at a $1.5 million they have to spend. You can save all of that if you go in residential. You know, your whole, maybe only one room has an AC unit, and you go and buy that separately. You don't have to air condition the entire space. I'm more comfortable because we keep doing this sort of thing. When we knocked on the Hilton, the Hilton was an internationally recognized, architecturally important building in Barbados. Maybe the only one. I don't know if you ever had another one that was internationally recognized as important as the Hilton. We should have enough skilled architectural planners that could have incorporated that wonderful building into the Hilton development, because you want to expand it. So why we didn't, I believe, is because we only pay lip service to this idea of being strict guardians of our heritage. We are not. We're not even loose guardians. We're not guardians at all. We allowed the destruction of slave huts. Slaves building a building out of coral stone. We have lost the art of stone masonry in Barbados. To see what a slave would do for his family, we don't care. The Water Authority just demolished an exceptionally high quality of workmanship stone masonry building. Report may be built by slaves under the supervision of the British military. And we just don't care. We could have learned so much. As I said, we've lost the art. So when we are just destroying what we have, we are destroying our heritage for the next generation. We are hypocrites, I think, to be telling the next generation to care about what we build if we are destroying what our parents built, or our foreparents built. So there are some developments which I think is useful to demolish, like the liquidation center. That I don't think is architecturally important. I guess the architect can correct me if I'm wrong. But if it's not architecturally important and you're going to demolish it so that you can rebuild something better, higher economic value, then go right ahead. I support that development. I don't support the development, let's say, if you're going to demolish the Empire Theatre. I think that has some significant historical or heritage aspects. So I would like if we could maybe preserve that, because it's also a stone masonry building, but nowhere near the quality of the underground building at Fort George that the Water Authority destroyed. Nowhere near it, because those were awesome arches. This is just simples, put one block on top of another. So that doesn't require very much skill at all, as opposed to the arches. So I'm just concerned that we are not being guardians of our heritage, and we are allowing just what I guess another administration called a sort of a mashup and buyback sort of thing. Whether we have the money to buy it back is another matter. So regarding the NAS, I guess we can come back to that at another time.
All right. Before we open our phone lines, I just want to remind you that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful permaclad U-panel and R-panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christchurch 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. This is Sanka Price with you, along with Dennis Johnson. And, of course, we're talking about the park, Golden Square Park, that's intended, and the
demolition of the old NAS building as well as the fire service department, whether it makes any sense. And we also look at some of the technical challenges that government is facing in the area. We also want to look as well at the whole redevelopment of the Fairchild Street Market. But before we get into that other aspect of it, we have a full board of calls, so let's take some calls. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Mr. Sanker Price.
Good morning.
Good morning. The gentleman I just spoke about, the Arches and the Water Authority.
That is Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Phillips,
yes.
I commend you tremendously. I don't waste time. I live in Orange Hill, St. James. You know there's a plantation called Lancaster? It was a factory some years ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I drove up there this morning, and I see the majestic hexagon form chimney with a plinth at the top. Hexagon-shaped red brick. When you will ever get that kind of craft, workmanship, and whatever again, go look at Arches and some of the windmills. Now, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, now I really endorse what you've said. When you're talking about quality and architecture and workmanship, it is things like that that you've got to observe and move in. Now, I'm not into the debate, Mr. Johnson, in no way, but Mr. Brown, Colonel Brown, said something about a monumental decision. I hope the decision is monumental, man. Bye-bye.
He said his piece, short and sweet. You're on the air. Good morning.
A very good morning to you all, gentlemen.
Yes. Morning.
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 How are you all doing?
Well.
Very well.
All right. Now, I want to start by endorsing everything Mr. Brown has said. I would like to listen to Mr. Brown. It's because of his fair and frank way of putting things. He does not beat around the bush. He does not polish it as it is. I like that. Now, I want to ask some questions because you're talking about the restoration or redevelopment of Bridgetown, so I'm not going to just go into the fire station and NS building. We're talking about an improved Bridgetown. And as Mr. Brown said, right, these things should be studied properly. I look down the road for the next 50 to 100 years. Not really nitty. Let's go and do something. That then thereafter is in 5 to 10 years of a problem. I'm going to say to you, because of the situation in the NS building, which was constructed somewhere in the 70s, it was not well maintained, and I noticed that for a long time, visited that building. As a result, it was closed for over 14 years. Why was it closed? We are talking about air conditioning ducts and such things, which are elementary in my books. Because whilst the study had been carried out to prove that the building is in good structural form, you would test for density and that sort of thing. Why then demolish such a building? It doesn't make sense to me. Now, one of your panelists said you'll have to more or less gut the building, the interior, sorry, of the building. Now, you have to be very careful when you're thinking in terms of gutting the interior of a building, because there again, you have to go back to strategic points of strength, which is what we know about. We have to make sure that certain interior walls will not be demolished, because we talk about weight and density. Things can be done in a way that whole building can be refurbished and make good use of.
All right. You made the point about elementary, when you're talking about the air conditioning, that's elementary thing. Is this, and Mr. Nicholson is our mechanical engineer, he specializes in AC matters. How elementary is this, sir?
I think the correct word may be fundamental. Mm-hmm. It is air conditioning is not magic. Anything can be air conditioned. The issue that he made earlier, point he made earlier, was that it has not been maintained, which is a fundamental problem with a lot of public buildings. The cash flow that's required to maintain the systems is not always seen as a priority. So a lot of the persons who are tasked with maintaining the systems work on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
The cost of maintaining air conditioning by a third party service provider can mount up. So the CEO or CFO makes a decision to cut back on the service.
That's true.
And then make the in-house maintenance staff make do with what they they're given. This is a fundamental issue that leads to indoor air quality issues in public service buildings.
Sir, are you there still? You want to ask another question?
You are finished?
Yes, he's finished. Yes. Do you want to ask another question?
Why is this elementary because of the kind of technology we have today and the improvement of the air conditioning with inverters and what's not? My position is that once a building has the necessary fittings and what you can go in, do the necessary deodorizing, cleaning, you can improve that system. So, you know.
Sir, do you work in this area? Sir, let me cross you. Do you work in this area? Because I'm not sure if you really listened to what, based on what you are saying now.
I
you
I
heard him, or you?
Hello?
You heard what Mr. Nicholson said just now?
Yeah, but what Mr. Nicholson, I heard many engineers before say lots of things. One engineer said once, a couple of years back, that there were some buildings that had to be demolished. And as a result, the cost factor was in the vicinity of over $1.2 million. I said they don't have to demolish these buildings. But you can go in and do some retrofitting, you could do some undermining, you could do some cleaning and whatnot. The buildings are there over for the last 15 years refurbished and still standing good.
If I can interject a little bit, Carl, if you don't mind. What you're saying is not different to what the engineer George is saying. What he is saying is that because we have reneged on basic things like maintenance, because we have allowed maintenance people to be restricted by shoestring budgets, we have not been doing the basic fundamental things that we know need to be done in order to maintain these buildings in a fit and proper state. Now, that is not to say that it can't be done. If the buildings are properly maintained, and if that building had been properly maintained, I would like to talk a little bit about this whole question of sick buildings. Mm-hmm. Because I really don't, a sick building is a building that is managed by, is poorly managed. I probably was going to use an impolite term to talk about the level of management. I mean, what we have is a situation where people make deliberate financial compromises on maintenance throughout Barbados. And we have a situation where you know that something needs to be done. I mean, I don't want to pick on any particular area like water, for example, but you can pick on roads. Let's talk about roads. We had a seminar where we brought all the top road people in Barbados together to look at why should Barbados continue to be infested with potholes? And the truth is there is no good answer. As the caller was saying, technology nowadays is such that things like solving air conditioning problems, solving structural problems, solving pothole problems, these are non-issues. I mean, the technical requirements of solving them is not an issue anywhere in the world. What is an issue is the management approach that we tend to take in Barbados, where we devalue the importance of maintenance. We think that because, as George liked to say, nobody's going to die tomorrow, you don't have to clean the filters, or we can always leave that out and save, you know, $1,000 here. Let's spend the money on somebody going on a trip somewhere, because that's more important and more pressing. Those are the decisions that is where we fall down. But what the caller is actually saying is that in many cases, there are options for rehabilitation. We have taken I want to go back a little bit to saying that Granville was saying to disagree with him, because I actually usually feel a lot better when I quarrel with Granville. This agreeing thing don't really work for me. Granville was talking about, for example, some of the things that we need to do now, some options that we have now, that various intelligent options that we have in terms of, for example, the redevelopment of Bridgetown. But, you know, the point I want to make is that I would ask Granville, on what basis do you think that these things are important? What we need, and the caller touched on that in a really interesting way just now, what we need is a long-term vision that everybody buys into, a strategic vision for Barbados. In other words, what do we want Bridgetown to look like 50 years from now? Not next year or next week. What will our grandchildren, what should we pass on to our grandchildren? Now, if we can agree on that, And it's not going to be easy to agree on that, because you can have people who think that there should be an artistic approach to what we do in Bridgetown. Some people think that we should try to develop the traditional Arawak heritage. Some people would think that the slave inputs should be highlighted. Some people would think that the British Army input in Bridgetown should be highlighted. That's fine, because that is what that represents Barbados. After we argue and fight and quarrel, we can come up with a consensus. This is what the final, this is what we have decided collectively. It may not be what Granville wants, it may not be what George wants, it may not be what I want, but it's what we have collectively agreed to. Once that is written in stone somewhere for the next 50 years, you see all these other decisions about what we can do for next year, what happens to a particular bill. You want to talk about demolishing, but there's some buildings that were later demolished in Barbados that are more valuable than that building on it. Do you know that there are jurisdictions in this world that will not allow anybody to build any building on the seaward side of a coastal road? And you know why they decide that? Because these are people who are intelligent enough to understand the value of that seaward view to their country from a tourism point of view. So therefore, there are many countries, in fact, Barbados is one of the few countries in the world that actually allows that. That you can come and build a whole set of buildings along our West Coast, for example. There's no other place in this world like the Barbados West Coast. And we allow that to be completely blocked out, not only from Barbados, but from visitors who come to Barbados, unless you're staying at one of those places. I could name country after country where that would not be allowed because of a 100-year vision for what they want to pass on to their children. Now, if you want to talk about demolition and you were to ask me, you would not like my answer. You understand what I'm talking about? But what we need is a long-term vision that then drives everything else that we do in Barbados.
If you're talking about long-term vision, if you remember back in the 90s, there was a plan for Bridgetown. It was wholly pedestrian. The whole of Swan Street, I think, was supposed to
reduce vehicular traffic.
Some aspects of it were put in place, where you have Independence Square was developed, so was Dunglet by Courts was developed, but the whole of Broad Street was supposed to be pedestrian. We haven't seen anything else happen. And in fact, what was done is now, because of the lack of proper maintenance, deteriorating in some parts. What has become of that plan? Because we're talking about a plan. One political party comes with a plan, and it's their plan, apparently. How can we ever really get consensus if we
need a Barbados plan that involves all the different political parties, the different opinions, the different races, the different perspectives? And it's going to take an effort to actually get something like that together, and there's going to be a lot of quarreling and fighting, and that's good. But if we were to get that and then get people to buy in at the end, can you appreciate the value of that? Because don't forget, I keep talking about something called organizational effectiveness. How well we work together as an organization. I could give you examples of some organizations, larger, much bigger than Barbados, that have failed in recent years. And it's not for lack of resources, it's because they could not get their resources to work well together. Thompson Tours, for example. I mean, have gone out of business. There's no good reason why they've gone out of business. Unless you can get your organ, even if you have the, if you were to hire the five best engineers and put them in one, and they cannot get along and cannot work well together, they will be swamped by another firm with second-rate engineers, but they work well together. There's synergy among the way they do. Can you imagine the competition between two organs? When you cannot get along and there's no organizational effectiveness, failure is almost the inevitable route that you get. And when we assess most of the problems that we talk about in Barbados, from potholes to the sewer system to the water system to the electricity system, at the root of it is this issue of organizational effectiveness and our ability to adapt to an environment that has changed. We live in a different world to the world that was here in 2000. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even 10 years ago, this world is a different world, and we still have our public services structured the same way it was in 1970 when that building was built. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to react to problems in 2020 in a completely different world.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines, take a couple more calls before we start talking about the whole development of Fairchild Street Market. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning, Hello?
Yes, good morning. Could you come away from by your radio? We're going to get some feedback here. Go right ahead, though.
No, I'm not by my radio.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
Anyway, good morning to one and all.
Yes.
I want to talk about Bridgetown. I personally feel that we shouldn't be talking about redeveloping Barbados, because I do remember there years ago when we had merchants living all around Bridgetown, and that is far removed from what it is now, because all those people moved away. And when those people move away, the poor ones move into town. But what we can do is we can improve on what we have existing right now. Like, for instance, we, in the plans, are there going to be any place, like, for those people who live, like, from St. Ambrose School area, right around down to Nelson Street and those areas down in there, which I might say that this word might be a bit too strong, but decrepit. So I shouldn't use decrepit, but there's some really bad conditions down in there. So are we going to be asking the folks who live in those areas, will you be willing to move out? Because we're making plans and we are going to make the space around your place a better place. We're going to give you a better house to live in. If you can afford to do it, yes, so on and so forth. But those people who have businesses, they might not want to move. But there are other people, I'm sure, who would love to move from down in those areas to give their children a better chance at whatever it is, life or whatever you want to call it. Now, when we are all into this Bridgetown business, by the way, are we going to have, like, let's say, a community center or a play park where those children who live in those areas where they can play the cricket in the road, the tennis, the children can have a swing, and all of those kind of things? That, for me, would be improving Bridgetown.